Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
Domo, arigato, gozaimashita. Thank you so much. Three languages in one conversation, Ichiro. Thank you so much.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy. I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me means the world.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Sources confirm that fun.
On 670 The Score.
Man, I'm glad, considering being in Cooperstown and it being Hall of Fame weekend and there's all sorts of crazy news that's going on around MLB, that John Morosi, our friend, who has local ties, has time for us to talk with him, and we thank him for this. He's joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. John, thanks for joining us. How was this weekend in Cooperstown?
Amazing. And Lawrence and Speaks, greetings from my rest stop along the New York State Thruway. I am eventually headed towards New York City from Cooperstown, which, as you know, is not exactly a short trip. I'll be part of our MLB Network coverage of the trade deadline coming up later on this week. But my brain is still largely in Cooperstown after that weekend and that very fun conversation with Ichiro at the end, where I, of course, had studied a lot to figure out how I could thank him and say, we'll see you tomorrow in Japanese. And then, of course, he surprised me with de nada, mañana. And so I was ready for that. It was great. Ichiro was a lot of fun. His speech, one of the all-time best. I'm very lucky to have been at a number of inductions now, and I don't think I've ever heard a better one. Funny, poignant, taught us a lot. And really his sincerity came through. So I just thought that was a brilliant speech, a special weekend. I heard the last segment before we started the top of the hour, Lawrence, where you mentioned Dick Allen. And I was really honored that I could be there and actually meet. So Dick, of course, was one of three brothers who all played in MLB in the same 1972 season. Hank has since passed away. Dick, of course, passed away in 2020. But Ron is still with us, and he was there yesterday. So I had a chance to meet Ron Allen. Amazing. All five of the Allen brothers and the Allen family were all all-state basketball players in Wampum, Pennsylvania. Really one of the best athletic families ever in Pennsylvania, which is saying a lot. And I read the memoir that he wrote, that Dick Allen wrote, and really talked about how he wanted his career to be a celebration, but the racism that he faced early in his career really changed him a lot. And it wasn't until Chicago he really found himself, and then he had the homecoming to Philadelphia, and now all these years later, posthumously, he is elected to the Hall of Fame. So just a story that we all would have hoped would have been a happier ending, that he would have been able to celebrate it in person and be up there on the stage giving a beautiful speech. But I think it was important for Willa, his widow, and again, his son, Richard Allen Jr., who I spoke with as well, that they all know that their dad, that their husband has his rightful place in Cooperstown.
That's wonderful stuff. And JP Morosi, who is so steeped in baseball history, great perspective on that. Totally agree about Ichiro's speech, which I thought was phenomenal. Can you do anything about the fact that the Hall of Fame speeches go against a full Sunday slate of games? And it's just so difficult to carve out the time to live it and watch it. I think it's one of the most unfortunate decisions of the MLB calendar year. And why not on the Sunday night before the All-Star game when there's no other games? Why can't it happen then and they can move the draft? I know that's where they have the draft now. It'd be better to have focus on the Hall of Fame than the draft, in my opinion.
That is a great question. And I have given a lot of thought to this. There was, of course, the one year when it was in September due to COVID. And actually, I thought it was a beautiful time to have it in terms of the way the weather functioned. There are a couple things to keep in mind. It's important as a summer celebration and a homecoming for the Hall of Famers themselves, who all come back from Juan Marichal to last year's incoming class. And so Cooperstown, the village, loves that it's Hall of Fame weekend. And obviously, as we know, by definition, when it's a weekend and when it's in the afternoon of a weekend day, there's almost always going to be baseball going on. And it's difficult. I will say a number of teams that have significant trade deadline decisions to make, a number of their executives were still there over the weekend, which I think really says a lot about how important the Hall of Fame still is. I get it. There's no perfect time and place to do it. But I will say this. I peeked ahead, and in the Hall of Fame media notes, they actually print the future editions of when the future induction ceremonies are going to be. Interestingly, next year it's about when you would expect. It's basically this Sunday, 1 year from now. So our apologies on that. But for 2028, when the Olympics are in LA and the focus of our whole country is on the Olympics and hopefully Major League players in the baseball tournament there, the Hall of Fame weekend will actually be in August. Early August, first half of August, and not in July. Hopefully that's the start of newer and more thought being put behind when exactly this happens. I do think the draft, we could see that move again in the next CBA too. So I would say, Matt, I identify and I empathize with your request. I will, in my many conversations with folks in Cooperstown, I'll say, hey, I talked to Spiegs, just relaying it from a friend. Here's what he'd like. And I'll say, what can we do about it? And if they say, listen, it's a little harder for Koufax to come back on this particular day than the other, I'll say, listen, who is the Hall of Fame for? Sandy Koufax or Spiegs? Let's make a decision here. And so we're gonna work on this and really try to find the best solution, Spiegs, for as many people.
They don't call him Abner Triple Day for nothing. I'll tell you that much right now. John Rossi joining us here on the Spiegel at Home show. We've been talking about the big news here in Chicago that Jed Hoyer has signed an extension. There's also crazy news going on in baseball. Catch the Spiegel at Home's listener up on this Bryce Harper commissioner thing.
Well, so that report came out from The Athletic earlier today that a meeting between Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred became contentious. And Rob, by the way, has been doing visits to every major league clubhouse. And a bit of a state of the game. It's a very important time, of course. The next CBA comes up after 2026. Of course, the WBC is next year. A lot of important things are going on writ large for the sport, Olympic participation, number of key issues. But obviously the economic ones are those that are getting a lot of attention. And Bryce Harper, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically he's, according to the reports, when the commissioner was talking about different issues, it's important to point out, at no point in time did it seem as though the words salary cap were mentioned directly, that there was no evidence, no reporting that he actually said that. But it seemed as though Bryce was sensing that there were some economic issues that were being discussed and rather stridently suggested the commissioner should excuse himself from the clubhouse because of the contentiousness of that particular issue. I understand why it's newsworthy. Obviously, you've got the commissioner and one of the most recognizable players in the sport, and we're still a year and a half away from this CBA expiring. There's a long time between now and then, a long time between now and opening day 2027, which is when it really matters. But it's certainly apparent that despite all of the good vibes that are going on in the sport, attendance is up. Large market teams are playing well. There's a lot of interest right now in the amount of media rights coming up. There's a lot of positives right now. Global growth of the game. We saw the Tokyo series. You lived it with the Cubs and the Dodgers. There's a lot of really good things going on. But the economic piece remains a potential stumbling block. And as Evan Drellick reported at The Athletic, the idea is that the commissioner wants to make sure the message is getting out there to, for lack of a better term, the broad membership of the union and not just the Bryce Harpers, who have obviously lifetime contracts that are in excess of $300 million. That's a very small group. I think that the MLB perspective going forward, if I can anticipate it a little bit, is that, look, there are ways that even if there is a salary cap, and I say if, I'm not sure there is going to be one, but if there is one, that if you raise the floor enough, it is going to do a lot of good for the players at the bottom level And even those that are out there and don't have a contract into February and even early March sometimes, that it becomes a more efficient way of signing. So that way there's maybe not quite the frenzy for Juan Soto, but that Juan Soto's 765 or so, maybe he only gets 720, let's say, and the other remaining $45 million end up going back into higher minimum salaries again if the same bucket is being spent on everybody. That's just one example. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be the case, but that's the idea. And I think that issue, as you can tell from Bryce's reaction, reportedly, is not going away. And the commissioner, I think he's done a good job of getting the message out to membership of guys, again, that are making $1 million, $2 million. For those guys, the bottom number means a lot more than Juan Soto's number. And I think that's the message that Rob Manfred is trying to get through.
I fear we're going to have lots of time and months to debate such things, at least fill in the context. Let's jump to now, John Paul Morosi. Who is the best starting pitcher who's going to get moved at the deadline?
Really good question. I actually think it's going to be a very busy week
Oh, no. Did the Cylons get John Morosi?
Yeah, they're trying. And they spend a lot of time in New York.
Because not a single starting pitcher is gone yet, Lawrence. And you've got guys from Hauser and Savali on the south side to Kelly and Gallen in Arizona to Mitch Keller in Pittsburgh. And then you get to the guys in Florida with Alcantara and Cabrera. But I'm not sure any of them right now are like, here's the ace that's going to make the difference. You know, Dylan Cease gets you excited about being the ace that might make the difference. Do we have John Paul back? John, you were saying it's going to be a busy week, you think, as the seal on starting pitchers has yet to be broken right now.
Correct. I think that the Cubs have had conversations with the Nationals about Mackenzie Gore. They've had conversations with the Pirates about Mitch Keller, Sandy Alcantara. That link with the Marlins has been out there since last winter time. When you are as good of a team as the Cubs are and your farm system is as good as your farm system is, and your GM, president of baseball operations, just got a massive extension, it seems to me that it's probably a good time to make some moves. And for all those reasons, I will be mildly surprised if the Cubs do not add at least, and I say at least, one starting pitcher between now and 5 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. There's a good supply of arms out there. And again, those teams I mentioned, Nationals, Pirates, really stand out as being potential sellers, as are the Marlins. The Twins, probably less likely. Joe Ryan's name has been out there. I'm not convinced that Joe Ryan is going to get moved. But those other teams I mentioned, I do think make a ton of sense and are potential fits. And the name that I think is much more likely, I would say this, for the Cubs, they will try their best to keep Owen Casey. I'm not sure if they can keep him while still getting someone that's controllable. But I do believe they would much rather move Alcantara than Casey if they can help it. And the one they really like, Wiggins, potential ace pitcher down the line, seems like they really want to keep him. But Triantos can be in play, Alcantara can be in play, and for the right controllable piece, Casey could be in play. But I do not see Casey being a guy for a Zach Gallen, for a Merrill Kelly, for a rental piece. The guy whose name I think we haven't talked about enough, broadly speaking, Edward Cabrera, Miami Marlins. Take a look at his highlights. He has, I think, one of the best arms in the game, period. And he has been a very popular name alongside Sandy Alcantara for the Miami Marlins.
It's funny that you bring that up, because we had some people bring that particular name up to us in our pre-show meeting today, John. So you saying it makes our spidery senses tingle a little bit, that maybe that's something that the Cubs might want to do. How concerned is Major League Baseball that some of the issues with gambling might be a little more widespread with this stuff going on with Emmanuel Clase?
Well, let's take a look at a couple things with this Cleveland situation. As you point out, Clase, now the second Cleveland Guardians pitcher who has been placed on leave pending the result of an investigation into allegations related to sports betting. Obviously, there's been no finding yet, but this is now two pitchers from the same team. important in the release by the Cleveland Guardians that said no other personnel of the club are believed to be under investigation or under threat of being investigated. It appears that for now, that this Cleveland Guardians related investigation stops at Ortiz and Class A, but still, that's a very significant piece of information because Ortiz obviously was actually going to start a game at Wrigley the night before he was bullish. And then now with Class A, he's one of the best closers in the game. And so what I think we're going to find out here moving forward is what was the evidence, if there was evidence of any sort of wrongdoing? And again, the thing about Ortiz, and we don't have all the information yet about Alcantara, but with Ortiz, or with the Class A rather, but with Ortiz, the situation with Ortiz had to do with very suspicious activity on particular pitches that were prop bets. We don't know what the situation is with Class A right now, but that's certainly in the scope of getting all the information in that MLB can, they were then able to identify Class A as being someone else that they have to identify and potentially investigate more completely. The issue here going forward, guys, is this. There needs to be a redoubling of efforts on the part of education, and also these notions of prop bets and things that can be done with one keystroke of one app that you don't think necessarily involves you, but it involves, let's say it's a parlay, multiple different things, which is what was involved with Tucapita Marcano a year ago. Even if it's a bundle of bets, but if that bet touches the team that you play for, that is really the third rail of what sports betting is in terms of baseball, where if it impacts a game in which you have a duty to perform, that typically has been, if that's proven, that's what you're talking about with Tucapita Marcano, which was a lifetime permanent ban. I mean, this is a very, very serious offense. And the other point I'll make regarding the overall notion of sports betting, we have seen multiple stories now about players who have been hearing vile threats, very, very harsh and threatening language from fans about, hey, you cost me X amount of dollars because of this play that you didn't make. And again, that was just honest effort by players, but they're getting criticized by people who now have legal, the bets are legal, but the conduct is not okay. And I think that's where we're seeing now a lot of very, very slippery slopes right now in the sport. And I think information and integrity are going to have to be very, very important now going forward.
John Morosi, last thing, and we only have 30 seconds. Not going to hold you to it based on the outcome of this series, and we'll see what kind of moves they move in the deadline. But 30 seconds, gut check, answer. Who's better right now, the Brewers or the Cubs?
The Chicago Cubs. I had to think about it for a second, but the Chicago Cubs. And I do believe they're the better team now. Of course, a big weekend win for the Cubs crosstown, and they are going to get better by a wider margin than the Brewers will at the deadline. So over the long term, I like the Cubs to win the National League Central.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks, JP.
John, you're the man. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
That is John Morosi. He's terrific. MLB Network insider. I love talking ball with him. It's a lot of fun.
Lawrence, Matthew Boyd, the all-star tonight, against Jacob Mizorowski, the all-star, who throws 102. His slider goes 96.
Cubs been ducking him.
That's what Matt Arnold said.
Been ducking him.
Tomorrow, the Colin Ray revenge game. Mm. Former Brewer Colin, I know.
Okay.
Against Cary Grove High School's own Quinn Priester, okay, who's been great of late.
And then?
Shota Imanaga coming off his worst start, maybe as a Cub, and certainly of the season, against Brewers all-star and ace Freddy Peralta. I mean, this is some stuff for the two teams tied for the National League Central lead and the best record in the National League.
We've got more baseball stuff to do before we get out of here. Ron Coomer is going to join us at 5:25. But when we come back, what's Montez up to and how does he fit in this new defense? We'll share next on The Score.